Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It has been quite a week in terms of, if you're a Cub fan, what just happened. I think there was a major crack in the platelets were shifting under Wrigley Field over at Clark and Addison after the trading deadline when the Cubs got rid of three of their major core players that were responsible for the 2016 World Series, Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant and Javi Baez. And we were hearing a lot of different opinions of people talking about it on sports shows, and everybody was talking about it, especially if you were a Cub fan. And so I thought it might be interesting to talk to somebody who may not be living here in Chicago, but certainly still bleeds Cubby blue. And actually, a major part of why we know of him is because of a great piece of work that he helped conceive and start in and has directed. I'm speaking, of course, of the actor Joe Mantegna, who you know as Joey Zaza from Godfather 3, or Fat Tony from The Simpsons, or some of his Tony Award-winning role in Glengarry Glen Ross, or in the great David Mamet film House of Games, Joan of Arcadia, and of course, most recently, David Rossi on Criminal Minds. Welcome to the show, Joe Mantegna.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Good to talk to you again. As I said, I'm sure you still bleed Cubby blue, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that doesn't go away. You know, those things are kind of set in your DNA when you're a kid, and that just still goes on.
Yeah, but you are living on the West Coast. I was talking to you about setting this up. You're even playing golf with Joe Maddon, manager of the Angels. So look at you.
Yeah, tomorrow. Right? That actually happens tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Joe's got a charity golf tournament, and so I'm actually looking forward to that. If nothing else, to kind of like get his take on all that's been happening recently, you know, on the north side of Chicago.
Well, that's what I wanted to. I was hearing.
Yeah, I got to know Joe a little bit when he was with the Cubs, and it'll be great to see him again.
Yeah, I was hearing so many different opinions about you know, the way the Cubs went about, you know, at the trading deadline, getting rid of Rizzo and Bryant and Baez and then Kimbrel. And so I was just wondering, from your standpoint, even though you're not here, you are a Cub fan and you are certainly knowledgeable. How many first pitches have you thrown out for the Cubs?
You know what? It's funny. I was with Tom Dreesen just last night, and they kind of said that he and I are probably tied for having done it the most times, something like maybe close to 15.
Really?
He's actually going to be there in a couple of weeks, and he says, "I'm gonna jump past you again, and so I have to play catch up again." So, but whatever. It's been quite a few. I'm sitting in my office now, looking at all the different baseballs that I have on in the box here that are from that. And so there's a goodly amount. Some of them are more memorable days than others.
I was just going to say, how many, out of the 15 or so, how many strikes did you throw?
I'm lucky, maybe 60%, only because I got a tip at one point where one of the catchers, you know, they always usually have the backup catcher catch the ball. And I remember one of the guys told me, he said, look, you're out, because I like to throw it from the mound.
Right.
He says, look, you got to put a lot of arc on it, because he says people forget that you're throwing down, you're elevated. So everybody throws it in the dirt because they think they're throwing a straight line. You're not, you know. And so once I got that little tip, I realized I better put a little arc on it. So it takes about a week and a half for my ball to get to the catcher. And when he gets it, you know, it's usually not hit the dirt lately, at least the last maybe, you know, 7 or 8 times.
So what did you think of when you heard the news? As I said, do you follow the Dodgers and the Angels, or do you still follow the Cubs,
well,
or do you just follow baseball in general?
I mean, like I said, you follow the team you were brought up with. You know what I mean? To put it in Chicagoese. I'm aware of the Dodgers and the Angels. I mean, I like both teams. I've lived out here in California many years now. I was a good friend of Tommy Lasorda. I'm actually very good friends with the owner and the president of the Angels, John Carpino, the president of the Angels. I've known him since he was in college, you know. So anyway, but the Cubs are always going to be, you know, I'm always going to, you know, bleed Cubby blue. But So, I mean, when I first heard the thing, I mean, it was like, you know, it's like being told you're breaking up with every girlfriend you've had, you know, in your youth.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, oh, my God, really, all at once? You know, all of them? But once it settled in and I started to read about it and, you know, talk to other people about, you know, it's evolution. It's like, you know, back in 1988, the New York Times contacted me and asked me to write the op-ed page that day for the day of the Cubs' first night game. They just thought it would be interesting to get the perspective of a fan, of somebody who had done, you know, conceived to play Bleacher Bums, knowing I was a Cub fan. So I wrote the op-ed page for the New York Times for the Cubs' first night game. And the gist of it was that, hey, this has changed. And I love a lot of people are going to say, oh, man, they're ruining Wrigley Field, and blah, 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 and it's never going to be the same. And I'm saying, look, that's what nostalgia is. That's what moving forward is. We'll remember Wrigley Field as it was, but now it has lights, and the young kids are going to see it and say, okay, this is great. We can see night games now, blah, 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 blah. It's the same thing in a way with this. I mean, it's a transition. It's going to, things are going to change. Things happen. This was somewhat cataclysmic in amount and yeah, how it happened.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, look, we went 108 years before we got a World Series. If this is another rebuilding process, hopefully it'll happen within less than a century. That's
well, it's officially, according to the Ricketts family, it's not a rebuilding, it's a retooling. You know, there's a difference.
Well, however you want to call it, yeah, retooling, rebuilding, you know, blowing the old team up and starting, yeah, all over again. However you want to phrase it, it is what it is. But my feeling is, look, maybe amongst these young guys coming in and these new guys coming in, there's going to be that new, you know, Bryant, that new Rizzo, that new Ernie Banks, that new, you know, the guys that obviously made the Cubs who the Cubs were and have been and can hopefully continue to be.
Well, I think it was a good business decision. I think you can't fault the team on that. They were all going to be free agents at the end of the season, and they're all going to demand a lot of money. They're all relatively young, as a, you know. Well, Rizzo is over 30, but Baez and Bryant certainly are at the height of their powers, and certainly probably at the height of their marketability. I guess my only question as a Cub fan was, I wondered if they could have, you know, I know to have signed all of those three guys over this, like, the winter for next season, it would have cost almost $500 million if you think about it. You know,
yeah,
so I can understand you don't want to put that on your balance sheet, especially after last year with a shortened season and no fans. And, you know, they spent a couple billion in the last 5 years rehabbing you know, Wrigley Field itself and the hotel and the neighborhood and their offices and their minor league park. So the Ricketts family certainly has invested a lot of their own money into this team. You cannot say that they haven't done that. But at the same time, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, and I'm saying my only thing is if they wanted to, I wondered if they could have staggered the, you know, instead of putting that big $500 million, number at the on your balance sheet after this season, I wondered if 2 or 3 years ago they couldn't have approached, Rizzo, or they couldn't have approached Bryant and staggered these extensions. So you could have found a way to save them but not have that one big dump at one time.
Right. Well, hindsight is 2020, and maybe it's that whole thing of, like, you know, you tear the bandage off the scab all at once as opposed to peeling it slowly, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is what it is. And like I said, we'll see what happens. But we have to say, at least under their watch, they did bring us a world championship, and some of the improvements that, like, at Wrigley Field, even, like, I remember there was all that controversy about putting up the big screen TV out there, you know, oh my God, they're ruining Wrigley Field. But I remember talking to Ricketts when he was out here, because, you know, they would throw a Cub night whenever the Cubs would play the Dodgers here, which was great. They'd get a couple luxury boxes and invite all the Cub fans here in L.A., like myself and Jim Belushi and all the different Cub fans, Bob Newhart, guys like that. And we'd go and we'd watch the Cubs play the Dodgers here. And Ricketts would be there, and I would talk to him about it, about things. And I remember mentioning to him, he was going through the whole controversy about getting all this heat about the big screen. I said, yeah, I said, but you know what? Now that all these young people have been coming to the games and seeing that thing, now threaten to take it out and see how much letters you get. I mean, you'll get even 10 times more saying, no, wait a minute, we kind of like watching the instant replay of the guy sliding.
Oh, of course.
Because I felt that when I saw it. I went to the first time. I went, you know what? This isn't so bad. This is kind of like, you know, the ivy's still out there. The ballpark is still, you know, in the neighborhood. It's like you got to move on sometimes.
And now you can't even imagine Wrigley Field without the standards and the lights. You know?
Right.
I mean, you know, like you said.
Like I said.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I said in that op-ed page. I remember saying when I was talking about, you know, how people are complaining about the lights. I said, when I was a kid, my grandfather and my father would tell me, oh, man, we used to come out to Wrigley Field and the fences used to be made out of wood. You should have seen it then. And I'd look at them like, yeah, but great. Let's have a hot dog, you know.
Yeah, right.
And I'm thinking if I tell my kids, like, oh, you should have seen Wrigley Field before it had lights. You know, this place had no lights. I could just see them looking at me like, yeah, great. Let's have a hot dog, you know.
Well, it's that like, was, I mean, think about
nostalgia
it.
Nostalgia pop, not mine. You know,
and that was still, I mean, think about it. Even in 1988, that was crazy that the Cubs didn't have lights.
It cost them. I would talk to ball players. I mean, I got to know some of the Cubs pretty well, and they would talk to them, and they would talk to me logically and say, you don't realize, people don't realize how it costs you games in late August and, you know, early September in those 100-degree humid days, and we have to fly in and play day games when nobody else is. And he says, maybe you lose two or three games you would have won. And that's the difference between first place and third place sometimes.
Yeah.
And so you think of all those years that maybe they would have closed the deal. You know, maybe the 69 Cubs could have closed the deal if they hadn't played all those day games, you know, when they did. You know, maybe the 84 Cubs would have been okay if they wouldn't have had to play in San Diego because of the,
right.
the thing of juggling the schedule because the Cubs only did day games.
Yeah, that's a great point. People forget that the reason that the Cubs did not have the last two games at home, which they should have because they had the better record, was because of the lights.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So people don't take into account a lot of things. So whatever, it is what it is. They're not going back. You know,
right.
They're gone. Rizzo's not coming back. He's doing well with the Yankees. It's all fine. You know, breaks my heart being Italian. You can relate to that.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But my only fear is I hope
it doesn't take another 5 years or 6 years, because, you know, the fact is you had the, you know, the thing is you say, like you said earlier, which is a good point, you know, now there's going to, hopefully there will be a new generation of a Bryant or a Baez or a Rizzo. And I get that, but you did have that core here. And that, as we know, in baseball, that is a rare thing, and it is so hard to get that. And you had it, and it was unfortunate that they didn't win at least one or two more, because they at least should have had one more under their belt. And so that is what's so hard from a Cubs fan's standpoint is that you know, there's no guarantees that tomorrow will come. It took 108 years from the last one, Joe.
No, I know. Well, look at the 85 Bears. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a similar kind of a thing.
Yeah, and even
a dynasty there, but
yeah.
So, you know, maybe it's a thing about Chicago, you know, one and done, and then we have to like retool and start all over again.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm talking to Joe Montagna from California, diehard Cub fan, made his bones going to Wrigley Field, observing what was going on, brought it back to his theater group, and I don't know, just wrote a little thing called Bleacher Bums. And from then on, Joe Montagna's been a fixture not only here in Chicago, but in Hollywood and acting around the world. We're going to talk to Joe after the break about what he's up to now in the acting world. He's got a few projects online. So please stay tuned. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards here. But listen anyway. No switching. Joe Montagna, actor extraordinaire, on the phone line with me from California. Joe, only got a couple of minutes here, but what is on your acting docket? Hopefully things are loosening up and you're able to get back to acting. Anything coming up that we should keep an eye open for?
Yeah, actually, I just finished doing a new series for Amazon that we shot. You know, it was very strong protocol, you know, COVID protocols, but we were able to do it. It was great. We shot it up here at Universal Studios for the most part. It's a show called Forget Normal, created by this Jason Kadams, who had done Friday Night Lights and Parenthood. And it's just a wonderful series about three young adults on the autism spectrum, which is something that I can certainly relate to and very dear to me because my wife and I have a daughter. Our oldest daughter, 34 years old, is on the autism spectrum. And this is a show about that. And the three actors who play the lead roles are all on the autism spectrum, as well as they were able to hire 12 people on the crew that were on the autism spectrum. So they really put their money where their mouth is in terms of this series. Because Jason himself, you know, has a son who's on the spectrum. And the scripts were just so beautiful and so well done and so true to life as to what that world is about. And so it's drama, so it's touching, it's funny, it's shocking, it's all those things. So it'll start airing on Amazon, it seems, from what I hear, the last quarter of this year, October, November, December. So it's called Forget Normal, and I'm just very excited about that. And there's also still talk about possibly bringing back Criminal Minds, because the show's done so well in syndication that I think Paramount Plus, which is the streaming outlet of CBS, is now perhaps thinking of maybe bringing us back for that. We'll see if that happens. That would be good too. I had nothing but good times on my 13 years on that show.
So you won't be a holdout.
Whatever's next. No, I wouldn't be a holdout on that. I mean, I had such a good time that I think the eight of us who wound up finishing the last few years on that show really bonded very strongly. And I think, whatever. But like I said, I've been in this business long enough to know, you know, anything's possible and who's to say what's what. But it's been Betty, Betty good to me.
Yes. There you go. Now, there's a great reference. Google that. Chico Ascuela. Right. Very good. And that's how you know you're a baseball fan. Well, I want to thank Joe Mantegna for taking time out to talk a little Cubs as well as what's on his acting docket. It's always great to talk. I met Joe a few years ago after doing a role that he originated on Broadway for a local production here in Chicago, and he was so kind enough to host my wife and I for a lunch, and we wound up spending a couple hours together, and it was a dream come true. I still have my script that you signed for me, and I take it to every audition, so just so you know.
Well, I hope it brings you luck.
Yeah, I hope hopefully too. We'll see what's going on now these days. It's so hard to find any productions, especially with the way this COVID's going. But hang on there. The Cubs, there's always another 108 years or maybe five. Let's hope it's five as opposed to 108.
Oh, yeah. Hey, and they play the White Sox on national TV tonight.
Yeah, tonight, the Crosstown Classic, a perfect way to end it. So have a good time with Joe Madden tomorrow, and just stay out of the sand, and I think you'll be all right.
You got it. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, thank you. Joe Mantegna calling from Los Angeles here at WGN, talking Cubs, talking some other things. Always nice to talk to Joe. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards, but listen anyway, and here, listen to the news.